Thanks, Jason. I really appreciate it. I'm going to set my timer here because I tend to go over. All right, we're moving and grooving. Thank you for having me and inviting me. I am a grateful member, and my name is Darren, and I'm an Al-Anonic. Just so you know, you won't find that in any of our literature. We have literature as well, fantastic books that saved my life. It's kind of a joking thing, the Al-Anonic part. But Al-Anon saved my life. And there's a reason, and through my story, you're going to understand how Al-Anon saved my life. But I know what you're thinking, if you're an alcoholic, or at least some of you probably, that we get around in a room and we complain about our alcoholics. And I got to tell you, in the beginning, that's probably true. But as you work the program, because we work the exact same steps through a different camera angle than the AA people do, but it is just as important, and we are just as sick, just in a different way. And so Al-Anon is a program that everybody that wants to find recovery through Al-Anon can join. If you have a family member or friend that's drinking is causing you problems, we welcome you. And I'll just get into the story, I guess. So like Jason said, I was born in Montana, actually in Great Falls, Montana. If you've never been there, don't go. It's an awful place. The wind never stops blowing. It's blowing right now, I guarantee you. And I was brought home to a single-wide trailer. My parents were dirt poor. My dad was working as a mechanic for the Air Force Base there, and my mom was doing her best to raise me. And my parents are both farm kids from North Dakota, and which is even worse than Great Falls. And they got worked to the bone. They're salt of the earth, hardworking people. My mom was forced to, well, she was told to paint every single outbuilding, barn, house, fence post in the entire farm that they by herself. And my grandfather was a pretty brutal guy and worked her to death. Actually, worked her one time when it was like 30 below, and when she came in, her lips were blue. And I think that that had something to do with her. My mom died of alcoholism, and we'll talk about that later too. So here I am, Great Falls, Montana. My parents bought a house in kind of a, I don't know if there's a bad part or a seedy part of Great Falls, but that's where we were. And my dad would work all day and then come home and work on other people's cars in the garage at night just to make enough money to live. My mom, and I didn't realize this until later, but my mom was drinking when I was, this tall. And I was told to go outside and play a lot. And yeah, that was the deal. What's weird is that my dad would get up in the mornings after working until, midnight on other people's cars, and he would always make me and my brother breakfast, which was really cool. And I still have the best relationship with my dad. He's an amazing man. He's really my hero. We went through, I should probably have some notes, huh? So we went through working a lot. My mom was so unavailable, but I think she was doing the best that she could. So at 5 years old, this is a crazy story. So, everything involved and worked around alcohol in my family. It's all I knew. And so when I was 5 years old, I learned how to water ski. And like you'd expect, I mean, I wasn't very big. I was 5 years old, and I learned how to water ski on the Missouri River. And it wasn't our boat. We didn't have money for that, but the neighbors had a boat, and I fell forward, then I fell back, and then I got up. And here I am, I'm water skiing. I mean, I'm freaking out. I'm standing on water, and I'm holding on, and everybody in the boat's watching me. They're not watching where they're going. Well, it's a river. Pretty soon, we're getting close to the other side, and I'm sitting there holding on for dear life. It's the first time I'd ever water skied, and I'm like, turn, you know? You can't yell. They can't hear me. You know, turn. And they're just like, woo! Yeah, they're hammered. And finally, I just let go of the rope. And they turned around and right up on the shore on the other side. Put a great big hole in the boat. I talked to the guy later on. He still owns the boat. I don't know. He must have gotten it fixed. And it's a river. So now I'm cruising on down the river. So I had to grab these skis and try to find my way to the shore. And you know, it's just that was growing up. My self-esteem took a hit. I was schooling. My dad bought a restaurant in town and worked himself to death doing that, and then bought another restaurant in a different town. We moved, and I did the third grade part of the year in one school and then a part of the year in another school, and they kind of taught the same thing, so I got way behind. And then we moved back to Great Falls, and I started the fourth grade. And I don't hear out of this ear hardly at all. And I got this teacher that talked like this. He goes, I couldn't hear a damn thing. I just couldn't hear what she was saying. And when I would go ask her, she would tell me to shut up and sit down. And so I failed the fourth grade. And my parents, well, my dad was working a million hours. My mom was unavailable. They didn't have any idea until I got my report card at the end of the year, and it was all F's. I just gave up. So guess who had to do the fourth grade again? Well, I was a scrappy kid, and I lined up in the fourth grade line, and all my friends were in the fifth grade line, and they started to tease me. So I beat the crap out of them, all of them. And then I got put in the principal's office again. And it was so bad that my parents had to actually move me to a new school. So I did my second year of the fourth grade at a different school. And I was still getting into trouble. And then we made another move. We moved from there to Missoula. And my dad started a transmission shop. And things got a little bit better. Before we moved to Missoula, I think it was 1979. Some kids from the bad neighborhood went into our basement and lit our house on fire. And so we were at my dad's little business, and the neighbor called. You know, you didn't have cell phones back then. I know, it's crazy. And said, Joe, your house is on fire. And so my dad peels out in the truck that my brother now has. I'm a little upset about it. And got home, and the people that were in the restaurant decided to take their lunch or their dinner home, and we ran over there, and I got there just in time to watch them carry my dogs out dead. And so, which is really weird, because the firemen were actually doing mouth to mouth on one of the dogs to try to keep it alive, which is, I have a lot of respect for them. So the fire was a really big deal. After that, we had to live in a neighbor's basement until we got the house rebuilt. And then as soon as we got it rebuilt, we moved. And my dad started another business in Missoula. And so Missoula was a whole different deal. I mean, the wind didn't blow every day. I didn't even know what to do with myself. But he bought a transmission shop. And the problem was my ego was really hurt. I did not like teachers. I ended up marrying one. Completely crazy. I understand. But I did not like teachers, and I got into a lot of trouble. So in the fifth grade, the other boys, I was really good at sports, and they were mad at me because I'd win a lot, and we had played dodgeball, and I knocked a bunch of people out with the balls. And so they grabbed a hold of me, a bunch of them, and threw me into the girls' bathroom on the after class. And I came out just in time for the teacher to see me come out. And he held me after the class, and he was a little angry. And he was taking his finger. He had these big hands, you know, like Joe Rogan hands. And he's thunking me in my chest and hard enough that my voice was skipping like that. And I said, stop. And he didn't stop. And he was just yelling at me. And so I grabbed his finger and I twisted it. And then he punched me. So then I punched him back and then he threw me on the ground. I'm in fifth grade. And so, yeah, that's how school went for me. Being that there was always alcohol around, I actually started drinking, I think, in the sixth, seventh grade. And by grace of God, I never became an alcoholic, but I started young. So I was going to sixth grade dances pretty well hammered. Did the AAU Junior Olympics because I was a track guy, and that's pretty much it for grade school. I just got into trouble a lot. Somehow they let me move on to high school without doing any work at all. I continued to get into fights with teachers at school, in high school. My dad finally had some success, and we bought a boat, which you'd think would be really cool. That was just another drunken tirade, right? It just how it worked. So we would go up to the lake every weekend on Sunday. And the thing I remember the most about it is the two coolers. You had the big yellow cooler full of alcohol. And then you had the little orange cooler. It was the 80s, so. The little orange cooler that had the food, the pop, the plates, the, you know, everything in there. And of course, we'd run out of pop, you know. Shouldn't be drinking pop anyway. Anyway, we'd run out of pop halfway through the day, but, you know, there's still 63 beers in the cooler. And as it always goes, it would start out fun. We're having a good time. And then by the end of the afternoon, pretty soon there's a fight breaks out. Dad's yelling at mom. Mom's yelling at dad. Everybody's upset. Things are getting thrown. And my mom would want to take me water skiing. And she was too drunk to drive the damn boat. I mean, it was just crazy. And in Montana, the lakes are just crystal clear. You can see 30, 40 feet down. And I remember being behind the boat, and she's bringing me in, and I'm seeing the shoreline, and I see the prop of the motor, and she'd come in and just, bam, hit the shore, because she was out of her mind drunk. And my dad put like 5 props on that boat, and she just destroyed them. So that was always fun, and it culminated in this horrible fight. My mom had befriended another gal. And she was a neighbor, and so she would come along all the time. She was like a bad penny. She was always there, and because she drank a lot too. So my dad has a big soft heart. He's just a family moving to California blows the transmission in their van and gets towed in. They have no money, so my dad buys the van from them for way more than it's worth. And so that they could buy another car and keep on their trip. And then we turned it into the going to the lake van. And we fixed it all up. That was a fun project for me and my dad. And it culminated, I was probably 16, 17. I was driving up to the lake a lot of times myself, but I didn't this time. And this other gal she needled on my dad. And especially when she was hammered. And then my mom would join in, and then they'd tag team him, just verbally beat him to death. And so that's how it went. We pulled the boat out. We're heading back, and she's sitting on the yellow cooler, probably for close access. And my mom's in the front seat, and my brother and I are in the back seat, and there's a table in between us. And they're needling him, and the more they do that, the faster he goes. And I mean, now we're flying. I mean, I'm looking at the boat in the back and it's just barely touching the ground. And we're all, my brother and I are freaking out, and she's just sitting there and he's just madder and madder and madder. I don't know how fast we were going, but it was way too doggone fast. So I had to do something. This is the hook. This is what turned me into an Al-Anon. I grabbed that table and I ripped it out of the floor and I threw it down as hard as I could, and it made this huge thud, and everyone stopped and turned around, and I told that gal in colorful language that if she did not leave my dad alone, I was going to throw her out of that blanking van. And all of the anger turned on me, which was fine because dad slowed down and they left him alone. And I thought, whew, I can really fix some stuff, man. Look at me, you know. And so not long after that, this gal moves away, and my dad comes to my brother and I and says, we're going to do an intervention on your mom. I had no idea what that was. So they had us write this stuff, and they got an interventionist, and mom went to rehab. We threatened her life to not go, and so she went. It was a 30-day deal. During that time, my dad lost his business. They actually had a sheriff come in, and a private investor that he had worked with took it over. My dad was just devastated. My mom wouldn't talk to him. She was angry. My mom could get angry. During that time, she moved out. I forgot something, and I grabbed on my way to school, and I turned around. I got out of the car, and I slammed the door so hard I broke the side window out of it. And I was in a really bad place. I mean, really angry. And that was the theme of my growing up. I was angry a lot. And so one day I couldn't take it anymore, and I drove up into the mountains. There's a ski resort outside of Missoula. And I drove up to the top, and I just trying to clear my head. And on the way down, I thought, you know, I could just drive off the road. And so I sped up my car, and I was damn determined to just drive off. I mean, it was sheer drop. And I don't know what happened. I chickened out. You call it whatever you want. I hit the brakes, and I hit the berm right before it went over the edge. And so I did not die. So that was a suicide attempt. There's no other real way to put it. When my mom got sober in that rehab, I had already been drinking way too much. And it wasn't that I ever enjoyed drinking. If I have one beer, I end up with a headache. So it wasn't like I enjoyed it at all. But I stopped drinking at age 19. I had never legally had a drink. But I had gone to a lot of bars. I worked for a beer distributor, so I was able to get into all the bars because they saw me deliver kegs, and they're like, oh, yeah, he's old enough, which worked out good for girls. But that's about it. Anyway, not long after that, we actually packed up again because my dad was out of work, and we moved to Seattle. And so by that time, I'm 19 years old, and they're like, I didn't live at home. I mean, the second I could, I got out. I just got away. And my dad asked me, will you move to Seattle with us? And I'm like, hell no. They're like, well, at least come out and check it out. And as it turned out, there were a lot of cute girls in Seattle. So I moved. Yeah, why not? And I fell into a tool grinding career that was just crazy. And I started dating a cocaine addict because that's what I find. And, but that only lasted a short time. And then I met a gal, and it was the weirdest thing. I'd go to Christmas at her. Well, first of all, this is how the holidays went at my house. I'm full-blooded German. And so big Catholic family, lots of, everybody has to eat. It's my grandma used to have one word that ever came out of her mouth. Eat, 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 eat. Every time you went over there, eat. And so holidays at our house growing up was always eat, 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 then drink, drink, drink. And it was always like that. And it, of course, let's face it, It was a lot of fun in the beginning, you know. Everybody's laughing. People are falling down. It's always funny. We're having a good time. And then as the night progressed, it would get darker and darker, just like at the lake. And pretty soon, plates are flying. Everybody's upset. People are screaming at each other. I mean, literally screaming at each other. And I just wanted it to stop. And so I got really good at being the funny guy or doing something to divert attention. And sometimes it worked. And again, that reinforced my Al-Anonic. I'm like, holy cow, I can fix this stuff. And it wasn't like I wanted to fix them. I just wanted it to stop. Okay. So I started dating this gal, and I'd go to her house for the holidays. And these were some weird people. You wouldn't recognize them at all. They would sit down, have dinner, no alcohol. And then they would watch TV, or they'd do games or whatever. I mean, it was just, I was sitting around going, who are these people? And it was the first time in my life I had ever seen what, I don't know, other people lived like. It most certainly wasn't my upbringing. And so that was really where I realized that, you know, that is, there's something weird with my family. But my mom was still sober. She was sober for a great number of years before she went back out. I eventually met a gal that I ended up marrying, the teacher. God has a funny sense of humor. And I moved to Spokane. This is in 1999. I got out of Seattle. Seattle's beautiful. It's not for me. And I moved to Seattle. I started selling cars, which was crazy because I didn't know I could sell anything. And bought a house. And this gal I married, she had an 8-year-old son. And we did not have alcohol at our wedding of any kind. And she turned out to be an alcoholic. I mean, I was trying hard. It just didn't work. And traditional, just trying to make a living, going through life, couldn't get pregnant, wanted to start our own family. Turns out her son was autistic. If you've ever seen somebody who has raised an autistic kid, I'm telling you, it's not easy. And this autism fundamentally changed my ex-wife to the point where I did not recognize her. She went into a depression. He was violent. This is before anybody knew what autism was. I mean, it was just like they used to tell us to just hit him harder, you know, just do something. There was no, we just didn't have any help. I ended up moving away to, well, probably to get away, but taking other jobs, and I was in and out. And weirdly enough, on a long weekend, she ended up pregnant. I wasn't even living there. I was living in California. So people were wondering. And what's weird is, you know, had we gotten pregnant when we were trying, I don't think she could have handled it. I really don't. But God always has a plan. And I got this amazing little girl, and she's 13 now. And right after she was born, my ex, her drinking went full tilt. And my Al-Anonic went full tilt because I had this little baby. I was all worried, man. I got to take care of this. I'd never had a kid before. And what an amazing little girl. So the drinking got really bad. And when I moved to, by this time, I was building a business inside of a business. So I was working hard. Thank God, because it probably kept me alive there too. But I was trying to manage her. I was trying to get it to stop. All of that triggering from growing up was coming forward, and I'd come home and she'd be hammered and my daughter would be sitting there in a dirty diaper, and I'm like, what the, you know? So I got tired enough of it, and she was kind of getting tired of it, and she went into an outpatient. And dude, I was more into it than she was. I mean, I'd go with her and I'm sitting there going, yeah, do you hear that? And she's like, she's just barely there. And I'm like, right, right? She failed it. And through that outpatient, we decided that she needed inpatient. And I don't recommend this. I forced her into inpatient. I threatened to take her daughter away from her. I regret that. And she went. And, you know, I have to control everything. It's part of my disease. And so I drove her to rehab. And I wouldn't stop. She was barely there. She was, well, let's back up. So to get her into rehab, this outpatient guy wanted to do an intervention. But we didn't have anybody that was going to do an intervention with us. So it was just me and him. And she told us to pound sand. I can't imagine why. And I brought her up to, I mean, this is after DUI and, I don't know, 10 trips to the ER. You know, it was fun times. And we decided to do this intervention, and she found a neighbor who was also an alcoholic, and they ganged up on her, and this lady, this neighbor, ended up punching the interventionist into and through him, and he was this frail or older guy, and he ended up in our rose bushes, and I'm pulling him out, and then they take off, and we're literally chasing them around Spokane. And I ended up having to, I got her finally, I took her up to Sacred Heart, I dropped her off to get sober, to detox, and I went home to take care of my daughter, and she walked from Sacred Heart to the Bowling Pitcher area where the house is in November, or it was October, in shorts, and ended up getting in a fight with a dog on the way. I mean, it was craziness. So when she got back, she called the cops, said, I caused all those bruises and everything, and tried to get me put into jail. By the grace of God, again, two female police officers showed up, and they were amazing. They pulled me aside. I'm in the garage. They're looking at my hands. They're like, did you touch her? I'm like, absolutely not. And I told them the story. And I mean, she's so bombed out of her mind at this point, she can't even talk. So luckily, they gave me this smart idea. Why don't you go ahead and get out of the house tonight? And so I took my daughter and I left. And thank God. You know, I mean, I was this far away from ended up going to jail, right? So, long and short, I get her in that car. The inpatient was in Vancouver, Washington. I drove her over. She said, I had to pee. And I'm like, well, I'm not stopping. You know, you're going to go. And she's like, I really got to go. So we stop on the way, and I chose a Burger King because there's no alcohol. You can't buy alcohol at Burger King, as it turns out. And I waited for her, and before she got out of the car, I said, if you don't come back, I'm turning around, I'm going to leave you here. And luckily she came back. She did the 30 days, came out. This is the craziest story. We get back. Now it's almost Christmas. But remember, I'm a pleaser. I have to go to mom and dad's for Christmas. And they lived on the west side. Now, I didn't have to, but internally I had to. So here she is, fresh out of rehab. We got to go to Seattle with this little baby. And I've got this old Honda. And I got up at 5, went to work, worked all day, came home, gathered everything up. And she didn't have anything packed, so I'm helping her pack, and of course. And we take off. And it's a blizzardy, nasty drive over. And on the way, I blow a tire in Ellensburg. And I'm like, oh, good Lord. And of course, if you've ever traveled with a baby, they come with a lot of stuff. There wasn't room for anything, presents and everything. I had to pull everything out of the trunk and get the little donut out and put it on the car and then get back. And then we drive in. Now, before we left, I went on Google and I looked at every hotel in the Auburn area. And I strategically found the one hotel that didn't have any convenience stores of any kind within walking distance. Because this is what I do. I know. And so we get all the way over there. And she goes, "Where's my medicine case?" I'm like, "I don't know. Didn't you pack it?" "Well, I thought you did." She didn't have it, and it had her Anabuse in it. So guess who drove all the way back to Spokane that night? Mad as a hatter. Oh, my God, I was upset, and I drove all the way back to Spokane above the speed limit by a long ways. And I got all the way back. I grabbed the material. I took another tire off of a different car because I remember I'm on the donut. You know, it's not supposed to go over 50. I was double that sometimes. And I drive back to Auburn that night. I get back at like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. Now I haven't slept for, I don't know, 30 hours, something like that. And of course, now we got to get up. We got to go to the house and do Christmas. I did all that for nothing because she ended up finding a way to drink. And this was a pattern that just kept going on and on and on. And after we got back, she was in another outpatient. And again, I'm a control freak. So when it was time for her to go to her outpatient, I would drop her off. And then I would drive around the block and make sure she didn't escape. And I would drive around, and I just drive around, and my daughter's in the back seat going, "Where are we going, Daddy?" Well, circles. That's what we were doing. It's because I couldn't face it. And this is where the miracle happened. I was tired, man. I had just had enough. I couldn't do it anymore. I literally lost who I was. All I was is the person who was managing her. That's it. That's my focus. That was my identity. It was all I did. And I came home and one night, and she's got to go to this outpatient. She's already half lit. And I gather her up and I take her to that thing and I drag her into the rehab. And I told those ladies there, I said, "If you don't effing fix her, you can effing have her." And they looked at me like I was a crazy person. You know why? Because I was. And this wonderful, amazing woman pulled me aside. And she goes, "You know what? I run this facility, but I'm not an alcoholic. I actually am an Al-Anonic." It's the first time I'd ever heard it. And she goes, "I go to this thing called Al-Anon. Have you ever heard of it?" I had heard of it. I didn't pay no attention. And she says, "I think you'd benefit greatly from this deal." She realized how much I didn't, you know. So back then it wasn't as easy to find Al-Anon. We didn't have the network we do now. I went to two places that were supposed to have meetings. They were just empty buildings. And in a blizzard snowstorm with a rear drive Crown Vic, I had to make it up to the noon Thursday meeting on the South Hill. And I made four attempts to get up the hill because I couldn't get up the hill. And I kept trying different roads. I finally made it up and I got to my first Al-Anon meeting. And oh my good Lord, I just blubbered like a child. I was so upset. And here's what I likened being me in a family of alcoholics. I said, I feel like I am standing in the middle of a hurricane holding on to a tree while Buicks are flying by my head. And I meant it. That's what it was like for me to live with this alcoholic. My life was totally out of control. Not because of what she was doing. She was fine. She was happy. She was getting hammered every night. I was the one who was going crazy. And so I ended up going to that meeting. And here's what happened. Here's the magic of those rooms. That's why I truly believe in the rooms. I found out that I was not alone. I was not the only person, because I'm here to tell you, when you live every single waking minute of your life for somebody else, you lose who you are. And I had lost who I was. And I was broken. So Al-Anon saved my life. Because there is not a chance in Hades that I could have continued to live that way for much longer. And I found that meeting, and man, I went. And I went. And you know what? I complained about her for the first few meetings. I got to tell you, I did. I was a little upset. And so we went through that. Let's see. I think I'm ahead of myself here. She ended up finding some pills after that and had one more DUI. When I was in the car business, I could get cars for cheap, and I ended up getting her dream car, which was a little Volkswagen New Beetle, and it was lime or green. She thought it was the greatest thing on earth. Anyway, she was supposed to be going to an AA meeting and ended up on some pills and rolled that car on the way down to Colville 6 times into the woods. Luckily, it was a Volkswagen. They're pretty tough. She walked away with, she didn't walk away. They hauled her away because she was not standable. And the crazy thing is there was a car seat in the back of that car. So the cops and the paramedics were freaking out because it had gone over and over and over a bunch of times. They're looking for a baby. And so I got that call. Good times. Anyway, here's the cool thing about it. When I got into Al-Anon, I learned that it was not my job to fix her. Who knew? I didn't know. And I started to do this thing that we call detachment. And it's supposed to be detachment with love. I didn't do the love part at first. I didn't. Not at all. But I did detach. And eventually I found a little bit of love. I realized through going to the meetings and hearing other people that she was hurting just as much as I was. And I gave her a little bit of grace then, and I started to feel a little bit of love. And here's what's crazy. When I got out of her way, when I stopped making excuses, stopped fixing, stopped cajoling and contorting and demanding that she stop, and I got out of the way, she stopped. Who knew? This is the craziest thing ever. And she stopped on her own. And you know what? I had nothing to do with it. My whole life's upended. I don't know how that works. Because if I can't fix alcoholism, I'm here to tell you, it isn't fixable by me. It isn't, unless the alcoholic wants to stop, there's nothing I can do about it. Because I can work pretty hard, and I was unable to do it. So what did I do? I got into Al-Anon, and I found hope, love, compassion, and a new way of life. I embraced it. I started doing service. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. Our steps are the same, by the way. There's just a different camera angle to them. And there's people from AA that go into Al-Anon, and we call it the graduation program or graduate program for AA. And there's a lot of people that think it is. I don't know. But it truly saved my life. I have a different way of thinking. I live in gratitude today. And I learned that in the rooms of Al-Anon. I don't try to fix people as often. It still creeps in. You know, I'm not, oh, here, can I pick that up for you? But my life today is completely different. I get to actually be present for my daughter. I moved out. I couldn't be with her anymore, even as a sober person. There were other traits and theft and all kinds of stuff. So I got out. But I have a really good relationship with my daughter now. I maintain a working relationship with her for my daughter. And I'm able to do that because I can walk away. If she really ticks me off, which happens a lot, I can say the serenity prayer over and over and over. I can call somebody. I can talk. I can go to a meeting. And I can manage my life and get the heck out of hers. And so that's what I've done. I feel like had I not found Al-Anon, one of us would be dead. And it would have probably been me. So I am a grateful member of this amazing program. Let's see how much time I have. I got 4 minutes. Holy cow. But I'm going to go ahead and just close up now. But I'll tell you what. And I love the fact that these two programs work hand in glove together. We're not separate. We're not opposing. These two programs help the entire family of alcoholism. Without one, the other probably can't survive because we're too mean and we'll never get out of your way. You'll never stop because we'll just keep needling you until you can't stand it. It'd probably make you want to drink. I'm pretty sure that's what I do. So now my life is enriched. I am happy. I'm able to, and I should talk, I have 4 minutes. I should talk about my mom. My mom died 2 years ago, and she died from this disease. And before she died, because when my mom gets drunk, she just blathers and she gets mean. I had to move her kind of outside a little bit of my inner circle, if that means any. Because I was, you know, the old me, that's it, I'm done, I'll never talk to her again. Well, I love my mom. I wanted to talk to her. So what I did is I didn't talk to her about personal things. I just kind of moved her out and loved her the best I could while I had her. She ended up with cancer for the second time. And when they told her she had to stop drinking for treatment, she said, I'm not doing that. And her disease, the cancer progressed pretty good. And she ended up in the hospital and they medically detoxed her because if she just stopped, she would have died. And the fact of the matter is it didn't matter because it was too late anyway. And the cool thing is, I got to love my mom right up to the end. I got to sit with her. I got to give her the morphine when she was on hospice. And I got to make a living amends to her and love her right up to the very end. And I'm so grateful for that. I don't think that would have happened without Al-Anon either. You know, it just wouldn't. So when I say I'm grateful, you understand why. When I say that I'm filled with gratitude and I love this program and I love each and every one of you, you know why. Because without you, I wouldn't be here. And I'm grateful to be here. That's all I got. Thank you.